Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. Glad to be with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, empathy in decline. According to a new study from the University of Michigan, there's been a dramatic drop in empathy in college students today as compared with previous generations. The so-called millennial generation, or Gen Y, is 40% less empathetic than earlier generations. But the question is why, and is the trait going on in broader society, or is it confined to Generation Y? Our guests this morning are Sarah Conrath, Assistant Professor in the Research Center for Group Dynamics and Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and Edward O'Brien, a graduate student and research assistant at the University of Michigan. And we'd love to hear from you. How worried should we be about declining empathy rates in college students? Is this a larger cultural trend? And just exactly why is empathy in decline? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. And Sarah Conrath, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, great to hear from both of you. Edward O'Brien, it's great to have you.
Thank you very much.
And Sarah, first of all, this was a study pulling from about 30 years of research. Can you tell us how you got your data?
Yes, this method is called cross-temporal meta-analysis, which is kind of a mouthful. But what we did is we actually didn't collect the data ourselves. We looked at anyone who had published data on the empathy scale that we use, which was by Mark Davis, that's pretty well-established measure of empathy. And we pulled data from all the different sources we could find, and then we tracked the averages over time to see how they changed.
And were you hypothesizing before you went into this? Did you have an idea about what you might find?
Definitely, especially with a task like this, which we had to look at over 600 articles to try to find the data, the appropriate data. So yes, of course, we'd have a hypothesis. And it was based on prior work I had done for my dissertation, where I had found rising narcissism in college students, so we hypothesized that there may also be a decline in empathy. It wasn't necessarily going to be the case because they are correlated, but not necessarily the same thing.
So you looked at a whole bunch of studies, and I guess I'm curious about what kinds of questions college students were asked to determine empathy.
That's a good question. We're just going to look that up for a second.
Sure.
So one of the questions is, I often have tender, concerned feelings for people less fortunate than me, and that measures empathic concern, so that's the more emotional aspect of empathy. And another question would measure perspective taking, so that's a little more cognitive. That question would be, I sometimes try to understand my friends better by imagining how things look from their perspective.
So this is really testing for that quality that lets you know what it's like to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, to really put yourself in their position. Is that kind of how you define empathy?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to think about it. It's not only imagining what it would feel like to be in their shoes, but also actually sometimes feeling those feelings that the other people are feeling.
And you wouldn't have been looking at this quality if it wasn't important. And I guess, Edward, can you tell us why you think empathy matters?
Well, I think, you know, not just from an academic perspective, but everybody kind of has a sense why empathy matters. I mean, everybody feels a certain sense of empathy every day, you know, with almost everybody they talk to. And, I mean, it has an enormous implications for you know, everyday interpersonal dynamics. So especially when you look at these other rising trends that Sarah was talking about, you know, a lot of these societal trends suggest that people might be more focused on themselves, you know, with narcissism and self-esteem and individualism, and all these things are kind of suggesting that, you know, our relationships with others might be affected. So I think empathy gets right at that problem and tries to figure out, you know, how we relate to other people and how we see other people in our lives.
Well, and I suppose in terms of the bigger picture, it goes well beyond that to look at how we shape social policy, how a younger generation will treat its elders, for instance, in decades to come.
Yes, I think that's one of the implications I've been interested in has been just the concern over what's going to happen with the aging population. Because, you know, traditionally in the past, kids would help to take care of parents as the parents age. That's been changing over time. But still, I think even if there's different ways to care for parents, you know, by providing for assistance and so on, I'm not sure that kids are going to feel the responsibility to do it anymore, which I think is a problem.
So are we talking primarily here, the generation you looked at where you started to see this decline, is this the Generation Y, the millennials?
And we don't use that term ourselves, but they were the declines happen in people who were born in 1980 or later.
And the biggest drop-off, as I understand it, drop-off was occurred right at the year 2000. Is that correct?
That's correct. So our student, or the students in the sample, on average, were age 20. So going back, we can guess that they were born in around 80 or later.
So it took a nosedive around 2000. And I guess the big question is, what happened in the year 2000? What changed?
That is the big question. So our data can speak to just the drop, and that's really what our analysis was about. But, of course, we have some ideas about why this might have happened. And, Ed, if you want to talk about that one part.
Yeah. Obviously, I think with any kind of effect, there's many, many reasons, and I think you know, it's important to go into the lab and try to figure out causes and effects of what can, you know, increase empathy and what can decrease empathy. But a couple things that we're speculating that we do want to test. One is technology, and especially since we're thinking about what happened after the year 2000. So obviously, college kids today they go onto campus with a lot more technology and personal technology, not just iPods and cell phones and everything, but they all have Facebooks and MySpaces, and they kind of connect with other college students online, which is fundamentally different than previous generations. So one thing we're speculating is perhaps kids today don't get enough real interpersonal interactions, which might be contributing to how they view others, how they care about others, and how they empathize. But again, that's just speculative, and we do need to go into the lab to figure out, you know, the pros and maybe the cons of technology.
Well, I mean, there's so much that you can do online now. Like you said, you can meet up with your friends online, but you can also bully people online, and everything is from more than an arm's length.
Right, and there's previous research in psychology that has shown that it's much easier to treat people with low empathy when there's sort of elements of distance. It makes it just, you're less likely to see the person suffering, and it just somehow gets us over that hurdle. So that's partly why we have hypothesized that it could have to do with this distancing technology. And another reason we thought it might have to do with online environments is because basically, people don't have time anymore, and I think that they spend a lot of their time in that environment. So you put the two together, being distance and then also spending a lot of your free time in that environment, and there's less face-to-face interactions.
Well, another possible cause, which I'm not sure how much you two buy into this, but the idea that there is so much bad news lately in terms of the environment, terrorism, politics, that these kids are just tuning out.
That's definitely something we've talked about. I think that's an important point. What we like to call it is desensitization. So there's a lot of work in psychology showing that, you know, overexposure to media, especially violent media, or stories like you were saying, kind of eventually people habituate to that, and there's a sense that there's an overload, especially you can go online or check your phone, and you're constantly getting bombarded with the kind of, you know, negative news, and maybe, like you said, people are kind of desensitized, and they're not reacting the same way just because it's everywhere, and an extension of that, maybe that they feel that the world is much more dangerous and much more, you know, it doesn't help them to go out and empathize because, you know, life is hard and bad things happen. So I'm gonna keep to myself. I'm gonna look out for myself.
It's an interesting point in time to be studying this, isn't it? I mean, I just coming into work this morning, I glanced over at a new book that landed on my desk, and it was called "Why the World Needs Your Caring Children" or something like that. And the Dalai Lama had written a foreword, and I think that everyone agrees that we're at this stage in the world's evolution, or whatever you want to call it, where there's so many difficult problems just sitting on the table right now needing to be solved. And it seems like this is, you know, the worst moment to have a generation of upcoming leaders who kind of don't care.
Yeah, I think just to bounce off of that, and maybe Sarah can talk about this in a bit, but we were also talking about how empathy seems to be like a buzzword in politics and in everyday life. I mean, they were just talking about how, you know, Obama didn't show enough empathy in response to the oil spill, and this happened with Sotomayor last year, and it kind of comes up and up again, and especially in the past couple of years, it seems like empathy is kind of the hot topic in politics and now in academia, and it is a good time to try to figure out, you know, let's take a step back and figure out what empathy is and what we can do about it.
Any evidence whether this is limited to college students or whether this is something that's going on cross-culturally?
Well, those are two questions. The one is it limited to American college students? And for now, that's what we have. Those are the data that we have. But we are working on another paper now that finds that it's much more general and it's affecting American society more broadly. As for whether it's cross-cultural, that's a real question. Unfortunately, the data are not as easy to get from other countries, but we would really love to explore that in the future.
So you said, did you say you're working on a paper now that did seem to indicate that it was going on across other portions of the United States population?
Yeah, we have a nationally representative sample. So what that means is it represents Americans in general. And we find that they people who are interviewed about things like empathy-related traits are seeing a decline in empathy at the same time that we're seeing a decline in our college students.
Oh, that's really interesting. So it seems like it's happening kind of at large in the United States, at least.
Yes, or at least that Americans in general are aware of changes. Whether it's limited to college students is still up for debate. But there is other work on narcissism finding that it's not limited to college students, that it was there's some work done by Jean Twenge on high school students, which is less of a select population, and finding that there are increases in self-esteem in them. So I think this probably does generalize a little more broadly than we think.
You've both mentioned the quality of narcissism a couple of times. How does that play into this?
Well, narcissism is kind of it can be a personality disorder, so it can be kind of an extreme can be a disorder, but psychologists also study it just like as a regular personality trait that anyone can have, even if they're not diagnosable. And so basically, I think a lot of us know what it means, but I'll define it. It's kind of excessive egotism, people feeling like they're way better than they should feel. One of the features of narcissism is low empathy. It's by definition. And in past research, narcissism and empathy have been negatively correlated. I still see them as different, but there is an overlap.
Well, we need to take our first break right now, and we'll come back and start taking our callers as well. As we talk this morning with Sarah Conrath, assistant professor in the Research Center for Group Dynamics and the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and Edward O'Brien, graduate student and research assistant at the University of Michigan. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. How worried are you about declining empathy, especially if it seems to be a broader problem than just confined to college students in this study that we're talking about this morning? Do you see this as a larger trend? And why exactly do you think empathy is in decline? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you this Tuesday morning. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This morning we're discussing empathy in decline, as seems to be indicated by a new study by our guest this morning. We're joined by Sarah Conrath from the University of Michigan and Edward O'Brien, a graduate student and research assistant from the University of Michigan. And we'll go ahead and take our first phone call now. We have with us Jackie calling from Eau Claire. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning, Veronica.
Morning.
I'm just calling to thank Sarah and Edward for this excellent work that they're doing. I've worked in prevention education with K-12 students in schools and in communities, and absolutely we are seeing a decrease in empathy there in relation to the increase in bullying and some of the attitudes that are going on. And I just want to thank them for putting this data out there and bringing this topic, you know, to the forefront.
So you're seeing an increase in bullying and a decline in empathy.
Absolutely, and there's some documentation through a study or a survey that's called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that is put out by the CDC, and it's a survey that's been done for middle school and high school students for many, many years. And in that data, some of the questions not only relate to bullying and students' attitudes, but also about the risky behaviors then that those lead to. And I think just in general, anecdotal evidence showing that unfortunately there are many students and many youth today, not just college age, but obviously it works up into college age, that have that, for whatever reason, that sense of entitlement and not thinking of other people. And that's where the increase in bullying, I think, comes about.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Jackie. Jackie there talking about her firsthand experience there and talking about the increase in bullying. How much do you see what Jackie is discussing there, what she sees?
I think that's important. And actually, we didn't know about that survey, so thank you, Jackie. We'll look that up. And we really appreciate her comments and think it's important to talk about bullying and empathy, because there is research showing that there is a strong link. So people who are low in empathy are more likely to bully. And I think bullying is becoming more of a problem lately, especially that there's been kind of a rise in girls bullying, which is kind of news, I think.
And she also mentioned entitlement. Edward, what about entitlement? Does that play into this?
I think it definitely does. There's other research out there that specifically focuses on entitlement, so the sense that you deserve more than others, you know, you're owed something, you're owed resources, even though you didn't work to get them. So I think it definitely, something like entitlement speaks to the fact that, you know, people are kind of maybe more looking out for themselves, which obviously has direct implications for how they think about others.
We've also seen some people commenting on reality television as being part of this, at least in some of the articles that I read about your study. And the idea, I guess, is that reality TV teaches kids, or I guess who's ever watching it, the broader culture maybe, that they deserve to be famous and rich and they've got their 10 minutes of fame coming. Does that play a part, do you think?
I think that's definitely a big part. We're especially trying to figure out, you know, what happened after the year 2000, and reality TV obviously came to the discussion. I mean, all these reality shows kind of sparked right around the year 2000 and the first couple years after. And I think not only does it lead to kind of odd role models, you know, you have people watching TV thinking that, oh, you know, they can have their 15 minutes of fame really quickly and all that stuff, but all the shows typically depict, you know, one person trying to win and beat out the other, and it's just, you know, the everyday people just like you and me doing that. So I think it kind of presents this odd exposure to what people can expect to gain.
I actually think another thing about reality TV is that the characters are often so difficult to empathize with. They're kind of, you know,
unlikable.
Yeah, they're so extreme, and it's kind of like, in some ways, we're not getting the practice kind of identifying with them because they're just these people who are unrealistically narcissistic. And, you know, it's almost like part of the attraction why people want to watch it is partly just to be, like, making fun of the people.
Exactly. Like, they've made a trait of hating people, that it's kind of fun to hate people. Then you watch to see bad things happen to them.
Right. Which I is think the that's exact kind of part of it. I mean, I hate to admit it, but
well, let's take another phone call now. Let's see. We've got Stephanie joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and
sure.
Thank you so much for this discussion. I'm a social worker in Milwaukee, and I don't have children, but I talk to my husband about this a lot and our young kids and their narcissism. And I wonder if you've looked at the correlation between the high divorce rate and the parents who have children. To me, it's a narcissistic move to just bail on the marriage, and you've got three kids and the kids see this, and then there's the guilt about the divorce and the discipline isn't the same as it used to be. And I wonder if you think there's any correlation between the high divorce rate and the narcissistic kids that are coming up.
Great question, Stephanie. Thanks. What do you think, Sarah? Is there a relation here to divorce?
Well, I think I have to look at these statistics, but I think divorce rates have kind of stabilized over time. It's, of course, it is a possibility if children are seeing parental fighting, whether they get divorced or whether they just stay married unhappily. And also, I think, and divorce can really depend upon how the adults handle it. It's possible to, I think, do it in a more positive way. But actually, right now, we just don't know if divorce is leading to lower empathy. There are some parental variables that are also changing. So one example is there are fewer children now than there used to be. So there's been a significant decline in the number of kids in families, and there's been quite a bit of only children recently. And, of course, one of the easy ways to learn empathy as a child is to figure it out right in the family context. So that could be one of the causes.
Well, thank you for your call, Stephanie. We appreciate it. And a call now from Christine in Madison. Hi, Christine.
Hi. I'm very interested in what you're calling empathy and general concern and caring. I advise students at UW-Madison from about 1985 to 2007, and I was actually quite excited about this generation because I see far many more students studying abroad, learning about other cultures, study of foreign languages is up, and many more students than I'd seen are interested in human rights and caring about people, but not maybe just, you know, oh, is somebody happy, but actually things that really matter. And I have a question about that. I also want to make a comment that I've been quite irritated about people talking about Obama not having enough empathy. You want a leader who can keep their head. I'm reminded of the poem of if you can keep your head when all about you are falling apart and blaming it on you. I don't want somebody who just emotes. And we see emoting all the time without thinking on the press, and people aren't talking about issues, they're just emoting. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, what are we talking about empathy? What is just emoting for emoting and not thinking? And I do think that a lot of our students are really, really do care about the world.
Well, thank you for that perspective, Christine. That is interesting. She brings up some good points, and it brings to mind some data that suggests that Generation Y volunteers twice as often as other generations, which seems to be at odds with the idea of them lacking empathy. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, I think the volunteering changes are interesting because we've seen them ourselves, and we talk about them in our paper. Because actually around the same time as empathy is declining, there becomes a requirement in many high schools to volunteer. And even if it's not a written requirement, it becomes kind of a sense of that volunteering will get you to college or will get you somewhere that you want to be. So I think the motives for volunteering really matter. Well, first of all, volunteering is great, and I think people should volunteer is great. But I think in terms of why people volunteer, like it's possible to volunteer for selfish reasons or for other reasons than just feeling pure empathy for the people that you're volunteering for. So I hate to be cynical because I like volunteering. I just think that's not necessarily as simple as it looks.
What about her comments about this generation studying foreign languages and studying abroad and seeming to sort of care from a more global perspective?
Yeah, I think Christine brought up a couple good points. So the first one was about how, you know, how do we explain these, you know, these many various examples of what seems to be more empathy or more culture or more respect for, you know, people who are different from us. And I think that's something that we absolutely agree with. And we think, you know, we're not trying to claim that, you know, people lack empathy or you know, the college kids today are so much worse off. But I think, you know, it's back and forth, and you can't really generalize based off of one finding. So again, even though we found an average effect, that doesn't mean that there's, you know, some people who are really great and some people who are really worse. So that's one reason why we really don't like to use these terms, you know, like a Generation Me and things like that, because we know that, you know, there's a lot of very empathic people out there, and I think empathy can go up and down through time, so we want to figure out these causes. A second interesting point that Christine brought up was about Obama and this debate over,
right.
You know, why is his empathy even on the table? And that's something I've thought about, and I think that's very interesting that, you know, out of all the ways we can talk about the oil spill and the oil crisis, you know, why are we talking about Obama's empathy? And in a sense, I agree that, you know, we want a leader who can just, you know, have practical solutions and can figure it out, and who cares about his emotions right now? And I think, you know, one way to look at it is, you know, all of these media pundits who are going after him, you know, ironically are displaying very little empathy towards him. So I think, you know, this whole debate over empathy kind of speaks to our claim that, you know, it seems like empathy is kind of on a decline, as demonstrated by these very unempathic debates about who has what.
Well, and I can remember back in Hurricane Katrina that President Bush was criticized about not caring enough. And I remember seeing pictures that were floated around on the internet of he and his father fishing in the floodwaters of Hurricane Katrina, which was a big, I guess, poster for people of the lack that they were seeing it of empathy. And apparently people don't want to see that same response from President Obama.
Yeah, I think especially in politics in the past couple of years, maybe because as a result of President Bush or what, it seems like empathy is kind of very topical, and people want to see empathy. They want to see the behaviors. They want to see the explicit, you know, I care about you. So I think, you know, the fact that it's so popular now to talk about in media and to talk about in politics, I think we have to start looking at the academic side and really try to figure out what empathy is and what does it mean to express empathy.
Well, thanks so much to Christine for your call. And moving on, we go now to Tucker in Nebecoggin. Hi, Tucker.
Hi. I find this stuff fascinating. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I was interested particularly in the desensitivity issue. We talk a lot about, you know, the media and the desensitivity we get. But I'm curious about your time horizon on these things. You know, when we grew up... Or, you know, generations back in the 1870s or 60s when smallpox was prevalent and people were shunning each other, or you were taking people to go see lynchings, or growing up in the Civil War or being around World War II, you know, that's a lot of negative stuff coming at somebody. Or, you know, go back further to the Roman Colosseum where people were voting on, you know, whether someone lives and dies. And I'm wondering what the time horizon on your desensitivity thing is. It may be the case that we're more desensitive now than we were 20 years ago, but as a species, do you think we've really changed so great over time?
Tucker, I'm just curious, before we let you go, are you implying that empathy is a quality that we can cultivate when things aren't so dire, when things are going pretty well, and when things are rougher, it's harder to be empathetic?
I don't know if I'm not necessarily taking a contrarian view or trying to, you know, disagree. I'm just in general, I'm curious over time. I'd say maybe that empathy could be an artificial social construction. I wouldn't rule it out of the realm of possibilities, and that's why I was curious, because, you know, I don't know. My field of specialty is more in education policy, not this, but I've been interested in it. So
okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'll take the question off the air. Thank you. Keep up the research.
All right, thanks, Tucker. What do you think, Sarah? What about the timeline?
Well, as we've discussed, our data go from 1979 to 2009. So I think Tucker brings up a wonderful point, which is that we don't know longer-term trends. We don't know what's going on, you know, before 1979, before 1900. And part of that is just we're limited by the data that's actually available. But I'm very interested in longer-term trends. There are some theorists right now who are suggesting that maybe society overall is just becoming more empathic when you think of like prior times, like the ones that he brought up. But in terms of desensitization, I think that the difference between way back then and now is we know instantly when something bad happens and we're exposed to it. There's some research showing that in the past 30 years we've been exposed to 3 times more information. And I think, and this is non-work-related information. So I think that in some ways we get flooded, and even if it's not necessarily negative information, we're just kind of in a state where it's kind of takes more work to think about other people because we're just so full of information.
Yeah, and I think I raised this issue to an old professor I had. You know, what is it about today's college students that are different? Because he's been teaching for 50 years, and I asked him if he noticed anything different. And he pointed out the fact that it seems like college students today, he said, have more access to information than ever before, but at the same time know less than ever before. And maybe this is one of the reasons. Maybe it's just they're bombarded with internet sites and, you know, text messages and all these things. They always have all this information at their fingertips, where maybe it's just not having the same impact anymore.
If you find that this trend, this decline in empathy, is going on in age groups well beyond college students, that it's just a broad cultural trend in America, how will that change things for you?
Well, I think that that's a little scarier in some ways. I mean, to know that it's just affecting all of us. In terms of causes, there's still the same kinds of causes that we would hypothesize, I think, because the timing, you know, post-2000. But it just, it makes us more nervous about what the future will look like.
But I think it also... It enriches the debate about, you know, what this means for public policy and putting it on a larger stage, because if this is not just something that's contained in college, it's not, you know, this isn't just an effect that we have to worry about when college kids get older and have jobs. It's something that we have to look at now. You know, take a step back and look at, you know, what is going on today, especially in the United States, which is where our data is from, you know, ranging from college students to beyond, about, you know, how can we step back and kind of get along and figure out, you know, all these problems in the world and domestic problems and policy problems, you know, maybe one big stoppage is that, you know, we're not connecting to each other anymore in the same way. And that's really blocking, you know, important policy decisions.
I wonder if a discovery like that would cause people to shut off the computer more often, or whether it would just signal the decline of empathy that would continue on for ways, if people would actually cut down on technology.
It's hard to say. And I think, I mean, this has definitely made us pretty personally aware of our own technology use. And I mean, hopefully the reason we're even on the show and talking about this is we do want to kind of generate awareness about the potential negatives about technology, although we're obviously using technology to be on this show as well, so we're not saying it's all bad. But just to take some time, we want people to take time to reflect in their lives about what empathy means to them and whether they value it. And if they value it, then hopefully they will work toward becoming more empathic, just like they'll work toward any kind of goal that they value.
Another call here. With us now we have Mary Ann from Milwaukee. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
My question has to do with an article I just read in a past time from a magazine from February, which I just got from my local library as a lend out and give away, because they get rid of their magazines that way. And I read an article that had to do with longevity and people lasting, you know, longer time-wise than they ever have before in our country and some, you know, in the world in general. And my question is this. I am of the baby boomer generation. I am the sandwich kind of person, and I'm also a volunteer type person from my own birth family influencing me that way. Okay, my question is specifically, how have the researchers you have on as guests found their data to be related to the prognosis of how young people will in the future take care of the older ones, and they're getting older and older all the time?
Okay, good question. Thank you, Marianne. Mm-hmm. So what does this mean for how we're going to take care of our elders in society?
Well, I mean, I think the prognosis as it stands is not great if empathy continues to decline. However, just because empathy is declining now doesn't mean it's going to continue to decline. The fact that it's declining means it's changeable, which, I mean, we're very hopeful that people will, at a certain point, say enough is enough and draw boundaries and decide what the good life is, and that involves, you know, social interaction and caring for others. So we're hoping that, although this is a decline, that this maybe stops declining or even empathy starts rising. But for now, if it continues, I don't think the prognosis is great.
And what about you, Edward?
I think, you know, Sarah kind of summarized it very nicely. I'm hoping that, you know, we can figure out how to reverse this trend or stop this trend in any way. I mean, we're going to figure that out through experimental research. So that's why we don't want to go on and make these broad claims without backing up with data. And also, I think, you know, coming from a personal perspective, you know, I'm only 23 years old, so I'm very much part of this, you know, college generation that we're claiming has less empathy. And I would like to think of myself that, of course, I'm going to take care of my parents when they get older and everything like that, and I hope I will. But I think, you know, one of the more interesting parts of this is that we got together and we're thinking, you know, not just, you know, stepping back and accusing people of anything, but we're actually the product of this generation. So, So if we can kind of, you know, think about empathy deeply and how we connect to others, you know, anybody can. So I think that's an important debate to have.
We need to take our second break right now, and we'd love to take your phone calls. We talk about a decline in empathy among college students right now and questioning whether maybe this is a broader trend in America as well. Well, how worried are you about declining empathy? Do you think this is a larger cultural trend, and why do you think empathy is in decline? Our number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn. Talking this morning about a decline in empathy among college students, and we have this email here from Ellen, who writes, great topic. I have children in this age group. Over the years, I've noticed how competitive this generation has been raised to be, competing for sports, academics, and even to be part of a volunteer group to look good on their record. What about competition? Does that play a role here, Sarah Conrath?
I think extreme competition, where there's the potential for hurting another person, is obviously not going to help us with our empathy. But there are ways to have healthy competitions and participate in, you know, sports and various types of things. And I'm not saying that everyone should get a gold star or anything like that. But I think that it's interesting, the point that Ellen brought up, because I think overall students have, like, less free time. Even as they were growing up, as they were little kids, they were in all kinds of lessons, and they're, you know, being taken, often if they're upper middle class at least, they're being taken from place to place and not just enjoying free play time. And it's possible that in the free play time is when we figure out how to actually interact with others, when we don't have parents there telling us how to do it, or we don't have coaches there telling us how to do it. And that could be a really important part of developing empathy.
And another email here, this one is from Cindy in Stillwater, who writes, there are lots of reasons for lack of empathy in youth. A major one I see is that parents are spending less time with kids, both when the kids are very young and when they're teenagers. A parent's major job is to teach children how to behave. Parents should watch TV and read books together with their children, starting at a very early age, and instill empathy by discussing how characters feel and what can be done to help others. Edward O'Brien, is there any sense that parents are not teaching empathy in the home the way they might have done in previous generations?
Well, I think that's a good point, although, you know, right now we definitely don't have data to back that up, but I think it's definitely a possible cause. I mean, Sarah hinted at it earlier. You know, a major source of how we learn empathy and how we care about others is the family environment, you know, from siblings and parents especially. So if there is this big change in kind of, you know, an everyday family dynamic, then I definitely think that could contribute to people knowing less about how to empathize, which is, you know, obviously the start of a life of feeling empathy for others.
Is there any sense about when we learn empathy best? Do we learn it when we're kids? Is there kind of a window that shuts if we don't learn it early on? Or can we kind of pick up empathy as we go along?
I'm hoping it's the latter, but... Definitely we learn it. I think there's a time period when it's probably more natural, which is childhood. And I'm not sure of any research that actually compares, like, trying to teach empathy in children versus adults. But my sense is it might be a little bit like language, that, of course, any adult can learn a language. It's just a little more difficult probably when you're older than when you're a child. So that probably as a child it's pretty important to instill.
But also, I mean, as we know, I mean, humans are an incredibly social species. I mean, we're born, you know, wanting to be around others, and we grow up wanting to be around others, and there's all these sorts of mental and physical health problems when we're not around other people. So I think it's natural for us to want to associate with others. So I don't think there might be like a necessarily a critical period of when we can develop empathy, but I think it's just kind of a lifelong, you know, natural proclivity. And I think that, you know, especially recent research in psychology shows that there is a neural basis for empathy. There's, you know, there's studies on brain and behavior and showing that, you know, empathy is kind of rooted in our brains. So I think, and we hope that we can develop empathy at any age, and especially hopefully after college.
Yes, otherwise we're in trouble ourselves, because we're both actually in the post-2000 college generation.
Ah, you both are. So do you see, I mean, obviously it's hard to judge yourself, but do you see echoes of that in your peers around you?
Well, I wouldn't want to judge my peers either, but I think that there's a lot more pressure for success, I feel like, in our generation compared to prior generations, and that makes it hard to find the time. And so in order to be, if you care about empathy, like I think we both do, you actually have to just really decide that's important and, spend time caring for others and not, you know, there's one thing we haven't talked about yet is there's sort of sometimes a negative perception about people who are empathetic, which is maybe why Obama decides not to show that at the moment, which is that people are, you know, too soft or like they're just, you know, they don't really care about their careers or things like that. So with that negative perception, I think people have to just make an active choice that, well, there are certain things that matter in life and that they're going to care about them anyway. And if we all make those choices, the world could be a more empathic place.
Back to the phones now. Let's take our next call. This is from Joe in Madison. Welcome, Joe.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I've been a teacher for 25 years now in high school. I love working with these kids, but in the past 6 to 7 years, I've seen an incredibly sharp drop in social skills at the same time that I've been seeing this rapid rise of mobile technology, smartphones. It's almost like these kids are addicted to it. If I'm teaching class, there may be of 30 kids, there may be 3 or 4 of them at least with an iPhone hidden in their lap, checking at the same time they're listening to me. And when I point that out to them, sure, they'll put it away, but then a couple minutes later, it's like they can't help themselves. They have to look at it again. It's like an addiction, and it's frightening. And also in regards to being aware of current events, they're communicating with each other, but they know less about what's going on in the world than they did 20 years ago. So I see this every single day, and my peers, my fellow teachers, they say the same thing, and we're very, very, very concerned and we don't know where this is all going to lead.
Well, thank you, Joe. That's a powerful call to make. It's interesting. I wonder if what Joe is saying is seen across the spectrum in educators, whether they would consider banning cell phones, banning iPhones, all of that kind of thing. Do you think we'd ever see anything like that, Sarah and Edward?
I'm teaching right now, actually. I'll be teaching in an hour. and I tried this term to ask my students to put away their laptops and that kind of technology, and it wasn't very successful. So I think Joe's point is really interesting. I think there might be some sort of, I wouldn't maybe not use the word addiction yet without more research, but there was a recent New York Times article, actually, that talked about the same topic, saying that when people are exposed to these kind of quick bursts of information from their technology devices, they have a squirt of dopamine in their brain, which is kind of the reward hormone. So it's kind of technical, but basically the idea is it feels really, really good, and then when they don't have the technology, then it feels really, really bad. So I think Joe's actually onto something.
So just curious, why didn't it work to tell them, aren't you the boss in your classroom? I mean, is this something that's sort of beyond teachers to get a handle on?
Well, I don't know. I think that, I could get into big arguments with students and I can yell at them, things like that, but I don't really think that's my job. I think my job is just to, you know, focus on teaching them the content. And if they choose to, you know, defy me or sneak, you know, an iPhone or something like that, I've decided not to waste my energy and my class time on that. I'd rather waste it on what they paid for, which was having, content and information, me teaching that the course content to them. I think even if there's a hard and fast rule and there's a professor who really, really cares about it, they would spend a lot of the time trying to stop it. And it's just not what I've decided not to do that.
So it sounds like teachers would rather teach than play cop.
At least me. I'm not sure about other teachers.
Okay, well, thank you so much to Joe for that call. We appreciate that. And on to David in Menominee. Hi, David.
Hi. Well, I'm impressed with the young people coming into the workplace. I've been in the workplace for a long time, and I've seen a huge improvement. The company I work for has a new program. They're talking about things that that improve how workers work together. I'm just really impressed on how empathetic people are coming into the workplace. I'm reading a book by Jeremy Rifkin, Empathetic Civilization, and there's going to be an improvement in empathy in the civilization. I'm just really impressed on how all the people that are coming into the workplace, and I've been in the workplace for a long time.
David, what kind of work do you do?
Well, I work in a logistics company.
So the people you're seeing come in of this age group, you're pretty impressed with.
Yes, there's a huge difference. There's young people coming in. There's older people in the workplace.
Well, that's encouraging. And to Sarah and Edward, I don't know, any evidence that maybe people who are in the workforce are exhibiting more maturity, maybe more empathy?
I don't know of any research on that, but I can agree with Joe that, you know, I have really good experiences with some students as well. I have a research lab with 15 amazing undergraduate students, very inspiring, and they get along very well with each other, and they're cooperative, and it's been amazing to work with them this past year. So I think that gives us the overall point, which is that if there's an average some sort of personality trait, there are going to be people who are higher than the average and lower than the average. And I think that the fact that it's empathy is declining overall is a thing to consider, but that there is going to be variation in young people today, and it's important not to stereotype them, and it's also important to have empathy for them.
Well, thank you so much for your call, David. And let's see, another call from Glenn in Manitowoc. Welcome, Glenn.
Oh, I thought you were going to run out of time. First off, I'd like to thank one of your callers, Tucker, for helping me frame the point I wanted to make. Your young researchers, one of them actually said something that'll help me. In regards to the Civil War generation and World War II generation, you're talking previous generations where what your neighbor and your town, your community thought of you, and it mattered to you. About in the 80s, there was a major shift in the way politics are run, where dismiss the other person's attitude, be it left or be it right. Their attitude means nothing. You look at the economic mess this country's in. Basically, it was what is in it for me and never mind the next guy. That led to what today is. You look at Washington, the older politicians that are leaving office, their biggest complaint is we could disagree with each other vehemently and yet still go have a drink after work. Society as a whole, this younger generation, you can't fault them in any way, shape, or form. They've never known anything but hooray for me and screw the next guy. and that's what it is. If your researchers look deeper into history, they'll see what I said and a whole lot more without taking up too much airtime. One of your researchers who was teaching hit it right on the head without even realizing it in discussing computers and distractions in my class is unacceptable. Ah, that's not my job. Hello, that's it right there. That's society as a whole, not just the younger generation, who it was my generation and the parents behind me that actually overall, there's exceptions, of course, but overall encouraged that mindset. Silence is consent. If a bunch of students in your class are being disruptive and you won't say, hey, this is unacceptable because students are here that are trying to learn and you're distracting them. If you want to be playing with your cell phone, please leave the class so the ones that want to work can work.
I'm going to jump in here because I want to make sure our guests have time to respond. Sarah Conrath, why don't you start?
Well, I have to stick with my point that I think I am there to teach, and it is for them ultimately that I'm there. And I think of my students as adults who can make those decisions. And usually they're not disruptive, just to be clear. Like they just are sitting there in their own little corner, like in the back row somewhere, texting or something.
But cell phones aside, what about this idea that society is exhibiting impolite behavior all across the board, and that's what kids today are seeing. So in a way, it's not maybe their fault.
Yeah, well, I think one of the important points that Glenn brought up was that, you know, it seems like today there's less emphasis on caring about what others think of you, not just empathy, but, you know, the way people go about their work or their classes is just kind of very self-focused, and you're worrying about, you know, if you succeed and if you achieve, but in previous generations, it seemed like, you know, perhaps in America it was more collectivistic. You know, we cared about, you know, how our actions reflected on our families or our friendship groups or schools. We cared about our reputation among other people. But there are psychological research studies that show, you know, the traits of individualism, so the sense that, you know, I'm the one that matters and I'm the agent in my life, that is also rising. So so in that sense, it seems likely that, you know, empathy would be declining because we just simply care less about what others think of us, perhaps.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you both so much for being with us this morning. It's been great to talk with you. Sarah Conrath and Edward O'Brien, thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you very much.
Sarah Conrath, an assistant professor in the Research Center for Group Dynamics and the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and Edward O'Brien, graduate student and research assistant at the University of Michigan. I'm Veronica Rickert. I've been glad to be with you this Tuesday morning, and I'll be with you tomorrow as we talk with female rock icon Pat Benatar. Kathleen Dunn is back next Monday. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.